I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. We're continuing our series, Black Queer Rising, highlighting Black LGBTQ plus changemakers who are making an impact on our world. And our next guest is certainly doing that in politics. Congressman Richie Torres is the first gay Afro-Latino elected to Congress, representing New York's 15th congressional district, also known as
South Bronx, the South South Bronx, South Bronx, the South South Bronx.
When it became clear that Congressman Torres was positioned to win his district's primary in the summer of 2020, he gave this impassioned statement to local outlet New York One.
And I would not be here today were it not for my mother. And the South Bronx is full of mothers like mine who have suffered and struggled and sacrificed so that her baby boy can have a better life than she did.
I asked Representative Torres about the models he looked towards when he decided to run for office.
To be honest, I had no models because there were hardly any people like me in public office. I spent most of my life in poverty, born and raised in this Bronx. I was raised by a single mother who had to raise three of us on minimum wage, which in the 1990s was $4.25. And the most formative experience of my life was growing up in public housing. So I grew up in conditions of mold and mildew, leaks and lead without consistent heat and hot water in the winter because public housing in New York City is so chronically underfunded. I actually grew up in a public housing development right across the street from Trump Golf Course. And as I saw the conditions get worse in my home every day, the government was investing $100 million in a golf course for Donald Trump. And I remember wondering to myself at the time, what does it say about our society that we're willing to invest more in a golf course than in the homes of poor people of color? And so that inspired me to get my start as a housing organizer. And then eventually, with encouragement from tenant leaders, I took the leap of faith and ran for public office. I was only 24. I had no deep pockets. I had no ties to the dynasties or of Bronx politics or the Bronx party machine. But I spent a whole year knocking on doors and I went into people's homes and I heard their stories. And I won my first campaign on the strength of door-to-door, face-to-face campaigning, became the first openly LGBTQ elected official from the Bronx.
I want to go back for a second to the moment when you see, so this is what inspired me to move towards the public service work, because it seems to me an alternate possibility is that you stand in that breach, you see the money going to the golf course, you see the realities of living in poverty just across the street from it, and instead of saying, let me move towards public work, that you would say, clearly, This government, this public space, these elected officials care nothing about me, about my community, about those who are like me, and therefore I don't want to be anywhere near it. And so I'm wondering, given that is clearly also a very reasonable alternate path, why or what other aspects may have sparked that decision to move towards it instead of away from it?
Well, first, I have enormous respect for organizing. And for me, change arises from the creative tension between the outside game and the inside game. But I felt that I could do more in elected office than I could do on the outside. You know, when you're a member of the New York City Council, like you can pass a law that improves the lives of 8 million people. And there are a few positions in private life that are comparable to the sheer power of elected office.
I'm also interested in the folks who looked at you and said, hey, you should run for office, because I think there's always something very powerful about people who see in us something we may not see in ourselves or maybe haven't fully acknowledged in ourselves yet. Of those folks that you were working with in tenant organizing and in housing organizing, are there particular folks who really helped you to envision what it would look like to run for office?
It was mostly women of color, and I had trepidation about running for office, partly because I had a fear of public speaking, partly because I'm an introvert and politics feels like it's a profession meant for extroverts. And I thought my youth would be a liability. But when I began knocking on doors, I came to realize that people saw in my youth a symbol of change, that it was more of a benefit than I thought it would be. And people would tell me in the 40 years I've been living in the South Bronx, I've never had a public official or candidate for public office knock on my door. I saw an opportunity to represent a new generation of leadership in the heart of the Bronx.
What is that experience of that kind of intimate shoe leather based campaigning tell you about what might be possible? Because, you know, again, your point about not having money is not a small one. I mean, I'm not sure folks understand when you're running even for local offices, much less Congress, which we'll get to in a moment. If you don't have the deep pockets and the huge intergenerational bank accounts, it shapes what you do all day. It means you spend a lot of time in the box, on the phone, calling, trying to raise money. So what did you learn from that door knocking experience?
In my experience, the most powerful form of voter contact is door knocking, is face-to-face interaction with voters. And you find that people are more welcoming than you would expect. Like, many people would invite me into their homes, would share with me their struggles. And it motivated me to fight my heart out, not only as a candidate, but as a public servant. You know, when I ran for Congress, very few people thought I could win because I was running against the most powerful brand name in Bronx politics. And I had an intuition that I would win. You know, most of the electorate in the South Bronx are women of color, Latinas and African-American women. And many of those voters saw in me their own child and grandchild, saw in me the embodiment of their hopes and aspirations. And that's a powerful connection.
It seems to me there might have been a time where being certainly a young Afro-Latino man, but also a gay Afro-Latino man, might have actually served as a barrier to those folks seeing you as one of their children or grandchildren. But when you ran in 2020, were elected to Congress, what I hear you saying right now is that that wasn't a barrier, that you were still seen as community.
There were political insiders who said that a young gay man has no chance of winning in the South Bronx, which has a tradition of social conservatism. There were political insiders who said that as an Afro-Latino, I could not win because there's colorism within the Latino community. And none of those were barriers. Like, the face-to-face personal connection is too powerful. And what I found is when you knock on doors and when people get to know you and they see themselves in you, they see their own stories and struggles in your story and in your struggles, you know, there's nothing like a campaign that forges a personal connection with the electorate.
Does representation ever feel like a burden to you, sitting at all of these multiple intersections?
It's both a burden and a blessing. You know, when you are a first, you feel the weight of history on your shoulders. But it's a blessing to represent the hope that a young kid of color from the Bronx can overcome the odds and become a leader in his community, can become a member of the most powerful legislature in the world.
Our conversation today is part of a series here on The Takeaway that we're calling Black Queer Rising. So I've been asking all of my guests in this series, when you hear the words Black Queer Rising, what does it mean to you?
The word that comes to mind is pride. Like, I'm proud to be Black. I'm proud to be queer. I love the quote, I'm here, I'm queer, and I'm not going anywhere. And elected officials, the next generation of elected officials, are increasingly representative of America, are increasingly rising as a multiracial, multi-ethnic, LGBTQ inclusive democracy. You know, and I saw, you know, when I never thought that I would become a member of Congress and witness within the first 2 weeks an insurrection against the U.S. Capitol. But there's a sense in which the insurrection in the U.S. Capitol is a reaction against the rising of Blackness and the rising of queer identity. It's a reaction against the changing complexion of America.
Representative Richie Torres is a congressman representing New York's 15th congressional district.
Come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo. Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.